Since 1957, the Germanic-American Institute has been building cultural bridges between the American Midwest and German-speaking European countries. And this is our podcast. We cordially invite you on the inside to join us as we share insights into German grammar, the German cultural experience. We'll look at current topics, and we will let you know all about the events that we are involved in and you can participate in. At times, we will also invite guests on the show who'll share their knowledge and experiences with us, and we'll answer any questions you may have about our content or the GAI itself. Willkommen to the Germanic American Institute podcast.
It still sounds as great as the first time around. This is episode 2 of the GAI podcast, the November/December 2018 edition. We do have our two leading ladies in the room again. We have Claudia.
Guten Tag.
Hallo. And we have Katrin.
Moin, moin.
Moin, moin. Typical German. Let me give you a quick view as to what's coming up for this particular podcast. We do have a question that was actually submitted by one of my students regarding the personal pronouns of the LGBTQ community and how does this actually function in Germany. Then I'll take a quick dive into the Krampus tradition, not necessarily making it scary, but giving you a little bit of an overview historically where Krampus came from and what does it look like today. Then we'll go into the upcoming events, and last but not least, Claudia has a little bit of information for the upcoming classes going into winter and spring. And with that, I'll just hand it over to Katrin. You have information about LGBTQ and how is it being handled in Germany? What does it mean?
I don't know how LGBTQ is handled in Germany, but for people that are not on the binary scale of gender, there are some alternatives in German, although we are coming from a slightly different perspective since everything is gendered in German. So if we are looking at the English language, gender is usually determined really by natural gender, right? So men are called he, women are called she, and we are using the very stereotypical categorization here. Living creatures tend to be male or female, he or she, but objects generally are neutral. So if I'm talking about a couch or a beer, I would say it. Some people and some animals as well actually don't fall within this binary definition of gender. They feel that neither he nor she is the right pronoun to describe them because they neither feel female nor male. In recent years, as gender norms have been openly discussed more than ever before, the English language now has alternatives, and they are namely they or their. Instead of he or she going to school, oftentimes you actually hear they are going to school, although it is just one person in order to express the non-binary gender some people experience. But now we're getting to German, and now imagine where absolutely everything has a gender. All alcoholic beverages are masculine, whiskey, gin, rum, with the exception of beer. Beer is neuter, do not ask me why. So we refer to rum as he, er, and to beer as it, es. Sonne, sun, for example, in German is referred to as she, but the moon is referred to as he. So, with all this gendering going on, imagine how difficult it is for a gender-neutral pronoun to be found for human beings not on the binary gender scale. One pronoun that has been started to being used is the word xier, X-I-E-R, which is a combination of Z and er. The first letter, however, is an X to be a symbol of the binary gender differentiation being erased for the people identifying with it. For my fellow German grammar nerds, and I'm sure there are some, yes, we also have cases for it. So the genitive would be xies, X-I-E-S, the dative would be xiem, X-I-E-M, and the accusative would be xien, X-I-E-N. You know, somewhat in line with the general declensions in German. Does it sound complicated? Yes, yes it does, probably because it is. Because we haven't even entered the realm of possessive pronouns, and we're not going to do this here today because we have something like 24. That's, you know, a little much.
Is any of this in the Duden already?
None of this is in the Duden, and these pronouns have not really caught on much at this point. It's very much a subcultural language that is being used. However, interestingly enough, some of the people that are using these also use the English words they and there, so they're being imported into German because it's just so much easier than what I was just reading. So really that leaves the solution up to the common sense. If you are unsure of how someone would like to be referred to or addressed as, just ask. At least that way one has a chance of getting it right.
So that's a more recent language phenomenon? Or?
That is a more recent, as these gender names, identities have been more discussed.
Is this something where you would think that in the future this would be something more prominent and it establishes itself a little bit more?
That is the big question. Some researchers think that language in general goes towards a gender neutral expression and that he and she will at some point just disappear. We have seen that with cases, right? Especially in English, it just disappears at some point. In German, we are seeing right now the shift from the genitive to the dative. It's hard to predict if it's going to catch on or not. To me, it sounds very complicated at this point. I do think there's a need for it, but maybe we need to fine tune some of this a little bit yet.
But essentially going forward, like way forward, if we replace he and she with something that's gender neutral, eventually learning German would perhaps become a little bit easier.
It's every German learner's dream, isn't it?
I would think so, but I guess for 85 million Germans and a couple of Austrians, I think it would perhaps be really difficult to switch over with everything that we've known traditionally.
Yeah, how much of that is going to be in our lifetime? I mean, that it just becomes common versus starting to transition. The other thing I'm thinking about, Germany has, you know, strong history with very male or female names. And in Germany, you actually can't just name your child any kind of weird name. When you register your child's name, they're very strict on what are...
There are registries of what names you can use.
What names you can use. So I wonder if some of these gender neutral names, as people are maybe identifying as gender neutral, if they will apply, if they will file applications to have their names changed to a more gender neutral name, right? So in your case, you know, instead of Michael, it'll be something, or, you know, Claudia or Katrin, which are clearly female. You know, if the German cities are going to open up the registries for names and how the gender and the name match, because that's something that's tightly controlled in Germany.
Yeah, and I have my best friend, really, her name is Kirsten, and that can be used as a male or female name. So for her name, it was required that she has a middle name that makes it clear that she's a female.
Yep.
I suppose to some degree, when we look at over the border into France, for instance, with Michelle, which could very well be male, obviously.
But it's spelled differently.
A little bit differently. Yeah. But the pronunciation itself is not really indicative. As an Austrian, I would identify Michelle at first glance as being a woman. So perhaps we have some sort of precedent here that we already mix genders with established names.
Well, in English, very much so. Morgan, for example, male, Tony. Female. Tony, I mean, a plethora of names where it's really not recognizable. But, you know, natural gender or sex, rather, somebody was born with.
Sounds incredibly complicated going forward, not just from a social perspective, but particularly also from a legal and from a control perspective, in the sense that the government eventually would just have to take sort of the reins off and say, okay, just do as you please and as you want to identify.
Well, humans and human relations, always complicated.
Whoa.
On that note.
on that note, let's talk about something a little less complicated.
But more scary.
The topic du jour, matching the season, is the existence of Krampus. Krampus, by the way, comes out of a German word, die Krampe, or also known as the claw. I did not know that either. I actually had to research for today where Krampus originated. And this is already where we're running into problems, because nobody really knows where Krampus actually came from. Some say it's predating Christianity. It goes all the way back to the Norse god of Hel, that's H-E-L. So right there is a little bit of a giveaway, right? Hell, as in the Hölle, or the English hell. And Krampus in itself is a combination of a goat with a demon. And when you look at not the masks that are being sold at the party stores, but actually the masks that are being handed down by generations, they are actually carved out of wood. They are really heavy and they're painted and they are sort of the family pride, so really established as this is the mask of such and such family that is then passed on to the son and to the next sundown. So those masks truly last generations. With the mask, of course, comes, I would say, peripherals, massive furs, and almost something that looks like wearing a football uniform underneath. So you really have wide shoulders and larger-than-life masks. And the common utensil that a Krampus has with them, just an assembly of twigs that are tied together, and they're used to swat at people. Now, Krampus comes with Saint Nick, and that's the 5th and the 6th of December, traditionally, in Austria and in Germany, and also in Switzerland and Northern Italy. And Krampus is the bad partner of Saint Nick. So we don't have bad Santa, we have bad Krampus, and then good Saint Nick. And the idea behind Krampus is that Krampus fishes out the kids that are not the good kids, that were the naughty kids throughout the year. And the parent can identify the child by just pointing at them or inviting Saints Nick and Krampus to their house. So there are all kinds of things that are going on just to make sure that the kids are being kept in line. However, it wasn't always like that. In the early 1200s, the Catholic Church has tried to eventually eradicate the Brauchtum, as we say, the tradition of Krampus. And they never really managed to get rid of it. It resurfaced, and in 1934, we tried again to extinguish the tradition of Krampus. Once again, it survived, and it flourished again, up to the 70s and 80s, where Krampus took a really interesting turn, particularly in rural Austria. And to be honest, I haven't personally experienced it. This is a story, perhaps a fable, passed down from my dad, who sometimes in the 70s, was at an Austrian ski resort, ski town. I think it was something like Salba. And they had a Krampuslauf and a Krampusrun. And these Krampuses came through town, and whoever wasn't inside a building was just basically brutally beaten up. And that was not a singular occurrence. Supposedly that happened in rural Austria quite frequently, so much so that they passed a law saying you cannot do that anymore.
So Krampus behaving badly.
Krampus behaving badly, behaving within the context of what Krampus was supposed to be identified as somebody who's just really an identification of hell, of brutish behavior. Mm-hmm. And just whoever was in their way was just beaten up. Now, again, that's a story that goes back to the 70s. It has significantly changed ever since. For one, there are Krampus guilds now. They come together and they truly celebrate and dive into the tradition of Krampus. And as far as I know, nobody has ever been beaten up again. On the contrary, it's almost handled like a procession, if you will, where people just line up at the streets and watch the actually really interesting masks that pass by. To wrap this up real quick, what's really interesting about this is that there was a rather significant concern that the refugees who emigrated into Austria, Switzerland, Germany, were just deathly afraid of the Krampus masks and just basically the physical and visual appearance. So the government, rather than once again trying to eradicate the tradition, decided to build sort of Krampus education camps where they invited parents of new immigrants, new Austrians, new Germans, to truly see how those masks are being made, how they're being painted, how they're being carved, and understand the meaning behind it rather than being scared out of their skin. I think this, perhaps from a social perspective, makes a lot of sense to sort of build a merger of, yes, you're new here, we get it, we have our traditions that we would like to actually uphold, so let's see if we can find a merger, and evidently that has worked quite successfully. So that's essentially the wrap-up of Krampus. So nowadays, if you make it to Austria around 5th and 6th of December, you don't have anything to be scared about anymore. You can just go out and really look at them and marvel at just their phenomenal craftsmanship and visual appearance. That's really it about Krampus.
Yeah, so we'll kind of add the bigger picture or the additional picture of the story. You know, you heard Michael talk about the, you know, December 5th and 6th. And that is really the Nikolaus tradition in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. And in Switzerland, he's called Semichlaus. And my apologies to all Swiss people if I pronounced that incorrectly. And in Germany, he's Nikolaus. And but why does he come on December 6th? What's the whole thing with December 5th and 6th? And why do the children place their shoes outside their front doors on the evening before? So this is not Santa Claus, even though Nikolaus and Semichlaus, they have the same outfit. But the person who comes in at Christmas in Germany is either called the Weihnachtsmann or Christkind, and they're completely different people. So Nikolaus, who comes on December 6th, does not bring the gifts on December 24th. And so each year on December 6th, Germans, or that tradition, remembers the death of Nicholas of Myra, which is in now currently in Turkey, who died on that day in the year 346. He was a Greek Christian bishop known for miracles and giving gifts secretly, and is now the patron saint of little children, sailors, merchants, and students. Known as Nicholas the Wonder Worker for his miracles, he's also identified with Santa Claus. So it's kind of a common history, but with Santa Claus here in the U.S. and Nikolaus and Semichlaus in the German-speaking parts. But, you know, in Germany, we separated the traditions to having that Nikolaustag or Nikolaus Day on December 6th, and the kids put their shoes out and get some little treats. And then these Nikolauses have helpers, right, who kind of weed out the good kids from the bad kids. In Austria, it's Krampus, and he seems to be the most scary of them all. In Germany, he's called Knecht Ruprecht, and he's basically a Santa Claus dressed in burlap. And in Switzerland, he's called Schmutzli. And so that tradition of having the good Santa and bad Santa is, again, all the same, but how that manifests is a little bit different. And the job of the bad Santa is to basically weed out the bad kids and punish them, whether it's, you know, you get stuffed in a sack or you get a twig or coal or whatever. But it kind of gives the kids a few weeks to get their act together before Christmas, right? Because Christmas is generally celebrated on December 24th, and either the Weihnachtsmann or Christkind come and bring the presents. So Santa Claus does not bring the presents. So it's interesting how that has developed from Santa Claus or Nikolaus on December 6th to now Santa Claus bringing the presents on December 24th. And I don't know what the traditions are in Northern Germany, where Katrin is from.
We do not have Krampus. As a matter of fact, yeah, the first time I heard of Krampus was really here. So although you said something about a Northern god of hell.
Yeah, it's basically the pagan god of the Norsk, yeah. Hell, H-E-L.
We don't have that at all. We also have Knecht Ruprecht, and, mm-hmm. you know, children are in danger of being stuffed into the sack. Mm-hmm. There are poems about that children mm-hmm. have to memorize. Mm-hmm. But we have the Weihnachtsmann, who is bringing the presents on the evening on the 24th. The 25th then is a day you meet with family more so, and the 26th as well, since we have 2 days of Christmas.
Yes.
Oh, you have 2 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
how comfortable.
So it's 24th is called Holy Evening, Heilig mm-hmm. Abend, and that's when the presents usually get done. And then 25th and 26th is the first day of Christmas and the second day of Christmas.
So, since we are already at the sidebar, as far as I remember out of my upbringing, in Austria we had the parents do up the tree actually on the 24th, while we were actually sent outside of the home going to a Christkindlmarkt or something of that nature. And we were allowed back in, and then we had to wait in the foyer. And then somebody behind closed doors rang a little tiny mm-hmm. bell. Mm-hmm. And we could rush in and see the trees with all the sparklers mm-hmm. and actually, by the way, real candles. Yes, we did real candles. Yes, I don't know how many buildings burnt down, but I don't think too many.
No, because the trees all looked like Charlie Brown trees. They weren't the big, fluffy, whatever. The trees, you know, the branches were a little bit different, I think. But, okay.
Yeah. Well, and they were fresher, too.
Fresher, too. Yeah.
We never put up our tree up till the 22nd or the 23rd. Yeah. And then, of course, it comes down on January 6th, Epiphany, right, or Holy Epiphany. Three Kings Day.
Yep.
So really the time for it to dry out is rather limited.
It's a very short period of the tree actually sitting there. And to be honest, I have not, until I actually got to the U.S., seen artificial lighting on a tree. That's something perhaps that we're doing now, but...
In Germany, I've seen more people do both, because obviously when you have the real candles on the tree, you can't leave it unattended when the candles are lit. So what I've seen my family do is that if you're in the room and you're all together, you light the real candles. But if nobody's in the room, they also have a couple of strings of lights that you can obviously have then unattended.
Yeah, but not in different colors. At least not it's where all white. I'm from. It's all white.
Yep.
And nothing is blinking.
Yeah.
But we do have a star on top of the tree, right? Something.
A star or an angel. Yeah, Christkind is on. Yeah.
We had something that looked out of Carnival. That, you know, it's like a silver ball with a peak on it and then Lametta hanging down from it.
Interesting. Traditionally, what was served for dinner at Christmas?
Well, the traditional thing in Germany is goose, right? Weihnachtsgans. And but
Christmas Day.
Yeah, Christmas Day. That's a good question. We had different things. I can't remember that we would have had a traditional Christmas Eve dinner.
A lot of people do wieners and potato salad.
Yeah.
However, in my family, we always did the Northern German herring salad. And then something called Sauerfleisch, which is really pork loin in a sour brine. And then we also always had chicken salad and sometimes eel.
That's right. My mom, we used to make chicken salad, yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely concur with the idea of Wiener Schnitzel. If you haven't had one yet, you might as well just go and get yourself some. It's the most amazing dish on this planet with potato salad. And so we did have the herring salad as well, which I'm not sure
we had sausages, Wiener sausages.
Oh, well, I retract my statement then. Wiener Schnitzel is the way to go, though.
Yeah, says the Austrian.
Of course, I might be a little bit
biased. But I think, you know, it's just interesting, these pre-holiday traditions are, you know, something that's really kind of gotten lost here in the U.S., sadly. And I mean, in Germany, you prepare for Christmas the whole month of December leading up with the four Sundays of Advent and things like that. But I think we have something for some people who want to enjoy some Christmas cheer and holiday cheer.
Yes, we do. And that's part of the next installment here, where we go into current events. This one I'm trying to read off my sheet of paper that I have here, hoping not to stumble across anything. So get in the holiday spirit here at the GAI, where we have an open house at our historic mansion on Summit Avenue. This is a two-day event that features authentic food and drink, of course, and local vendors selling German Christmas gifts, food and handmade goods, as well as entertainment for the entire family. Now, where it gets particularly interesting is that we serve Glühwein. Glühwein is hot mulled wine. The only way to truly describe it is just by not even describing it at all, but coming by and having a taste. If you don't like wine, we have beer, of course. This is, after all, the Germanic American Institute. And you can savor German specialties, including bratwurst, Aki's pretzels. I've recently been to Aki's. It's a phenomenal bakery in Minneapolis. And Kartoffelpuffer, which I personally, as an Austrian, don't know exactly what they are. So I'm going to have to ask the two ladies here in the room in a second. And we also serve those with applesauce or sour cream and smoked salmon. Before I go on to the next point here, what are Kartoffelpuffer?
And let's make sure we say the date.
Yes, the date is...
On December 1st and 2nd from 11 to 4, both days. So that's Saturday and Sunday, 11 to 4. And on Sunday, we have a special treat for the young children where we have Nikolaus here. The person we just talked about will be here.
Without Krampus.
Without Krampus. It's going to be kind of like a hybrid German-Americanish type Nikolaus. Yes.
Knecht Ruprecht?
No.
No. So we...
Nothing to scare the kids. I think, you know, that whole tradition here in America just went away. That whole bad kids get punished type thing, because I don't know why. But yeah, Kathleen can tell you everything about Kartoffelpuffer.
Kartoffelpuffer, or they're also called Reibekuchen, depending on where you are. I'm sure there are other names. It's basically potato pancakes. So you have potato
shredded
into small bits, with a little bit of flour and a little bit of egg, and then fried in oil.
Oh, so not basically state fair food.
Ah, yeah, we should try it on a steak, shouldn't we?
Yes.
Not a bad idea. So, yeah, just since I did not see the line with the dates, even though it's marked and highlighted in pink, that didn't even register. December 1st and 2nd, 2018, 11 a.m. through 4 p.m. Come on by. And there's also one last line item here. That's the Modelleisenbahngruppe, the model train group, who will be showing German model trains in action. So, in other words, they're going to set up their set, and they're going to show you exactly what those authentic but smaller German model trains looks like. They have also crafts, activities, entertainment that will be provided, and all ages are, of course, welcome. And as Claudia just mentioned, on Sunday only, children can visit St. Nick in the ballroom from noon through 3, or visit the Kinderstube German Immersion Preschool Open House to learn German songs and crafts. Which, German songs and crafts, that's the entry to learning German, so definitely a good idea to come on by.
Yep, and the good thing is it's free. I mean, obviously the food and drink, but there's no cover. So come on by and enjoy German holiday cheer.
So one more time, since I forgot it the first time around, let's talk about the dates again. Saturday and Sunday, December 1st and 2nd, 2018, from 11 a.m. through 4 p.m. Pause the podcast right now, put this on your calendar, and we'll see you here at the GAI.
Okay, there's another event I think we want to briefly mention that's been going on at the Schmidt Brewery for the last few days and runs through November 16th or 18th or something like that.
We did talk about this in the last installment of our podcast, Geniale Dilettanten, the subculture of the Germans in the 1980s, where Nena emerged from, and other quite significant musical works, as well as other artistic, if you will, displays that you can now actually view here in St. Paul at the Schmidt Brewery. And the entire showing lasts until Sunday, November 18th, from 12 through 4 p.m. And there are various dates in between that are Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 5th, 7th, 9th, 10th, and 11th. And then again, 12th, 14th, 16th, 17th, and 18th. We can find the dates and the times on the website as well.
On the GAI website, yep.
Outstanding. That's gai-mn.org.
Yep. And then just to tie into this, so this Geniale Dilettanten is part of this year of a German-American friendship, the Deutschlandjahr, which is a comprehensive and collaborative initiative. And we briefly talked about that last time, but we're doing additional cultural programming all throughout 2019. And the programming goals are to host various educational experiences focusing on modern Germany's approach and success in social and cultural, climate smart, sustainable building practices, and earth-friendly initiatives. So kind of stay tuned throughout the next few podcasts as we're going to talk about these programs. Another initiative that we're talking about is an apprenticeship initiative that we're working on, which is also something that's really embedded in the German, Austrian, Swiss culture as an education and a dual education opportunity. So we're packing a lot of those things in with this Deutschlandjahr Wunderbar together. So stay tuned.
We also still have two of the sustainability workshops for the smaller children coming up in January and in February. The water one, hydropower, already happened in October.
Yep.
Also part of the Deutschlandjahr. It's truly something for all ages.
Yep.
Do you have a little more information on the sustainability workshop? What is happening there?
We are basically talking about hydropower, the first one. Then we're talking about wind power and solar power to show forms of alternative energy, sustainability issues in which Germany really is on the forefront, spreading the message.
Which there's a little interesting side stat to that. Germany is committed to turn the entire country to 80% renewable energy by 2025. So that's actually coming up pretty quickly, and 80% is quite a significant number.
And there are certain days now already when there's good wind and sun where Germany is able to pretty much run on renewable energy, almost completely. So there really, really building out that infrastructure. So yeah, Germany is really leading in the technology and the development, and those are things we want to share. And that's part of Das Deutschland, yeah. And the theme for the GAI is Das moderne Deutschland, or modern Germany. So again, stay tuned over the next few podcasts as we talk about this.
Outstanding. Anything else that we need to add for tonight?
Last but not least, by the middle end of November, and then certainly by the time December 1st comes around with the holiday open house and Christmas open house, check out our website for the spring and summer, fall, winter and spring classes. So language classes for adults, for kids, workshops, all of that is going to be posted soon. And you know, so if you're interested in learning more about German language and culture, classes are the way to really get to that. So check it out on our website at gei-mn.org.
Perfect. So before we wrap this up, there is a quick administrative update, if you will, that some of our podcast players, such as Apple Podcasts, have not yet adequately updated the email address to which you can send your questions to. It is language@gei-mn.org, and Apple Podcasts, for some reason, still has it shown as languages. So subtract the S from languages and just write language@gei-mn.org, and you get to us with all your questions that you would like us to answer in future episodes. We're still working on the update, so perhaps by the time you see that, it might already be fixed, but just so in case you are aware. If you're one of our students, of course, please deposit your questions with your teacher. They will forward those questions to us, and we are happy to answer those. Other than that, thanks for hanging out with us, and we'll see you again hear you again
next month.
Danke,
tschüss.
Tschüss.